So what we have been speaking about, discussing about the thinking mind, which is the ego with its sense of doership, functioning less and less, because if there is no one to hate, blame, condemn, someone else or myself, when that dialogue of the thinking mind is finished, because we have understood nobody is truly the doer of their actions. When this is understood, reflected upon in our own lives, we find that earlier, when the content of the mind was directed at individuals, it was churning all the time. When we see the hand of God behind everyone in our lives, shaping people the way God shaped them, genetically, in terms of conditioning, and giving them their innate nature. When we are living this acceptance, the churning of the mind is less and less and less. We are now tasting a vacant mind. So if I was to simplify it, let's say you are going somewhere by car or walking, and earlier you kept thinking, this one said this to me, this one did this to me, how dare he have said this, why did this person behave like this to me? Suddenly all that dialogue has been dissolved. And I find when I'm in the car or walking down the street, I'm witnessing more and more my environment and surroundings because I'm not lost in the thinking mind. Now, what does this mean? Because we hear the highest spiritual teachings talk about realizing the self, enlightenment. Could it not be that with the quietening of the thinking mind, which would automatically mean that I am resting more and more in being, in presence, could not that be discovering the self rather than an object to be discovered? Now, the tongue, when it tastes spicy food, it knows it's spicy. When it has a dessert, it knows it's sweet. But when there is no food in the mouth, couldn't we say that the tongue is resting in its natural state? So similarly, when life is no longer involving us like it used to, all the content and drama, we find we are no longer buffeted by life between the banks of pleasure and pain. We find the next situation which comes before us, maybe a challenge, maybe a crisis, or maybe some pleasurable moment, that we are handling it with more and more equanimity than we used to. We find that we are reacting less and less with life and life situations and responding more and more. Would not that mean that we are rediscovering our true nature, which is just resting in being? The tongue, which is at rest, does not mean it's not there. Now, the tongue, which is at rest, if I stretch it a bit further, it would mean the tongue is at peace. There's nothing to activate it and agitate it. So could we not say our true nature is of peace, peace and equanimity, which was always our true nature? But because we got lost in the illusion of separation, the foundation of which is people are the doers of their actions, I am the doer of my action. When we got lost in this realm of me versus you, we lost that peace. That peace, the deep peace of deep sleep, when the me and my story was absent, but in deep sleep it is unconscious. But could we not say from my own experience that I am most at peace when I am not there? It is the mind which is troubling with various kinds of thoughts and thinking in the duration of time into an imaginary future or a dead past. So if we find that our lives are becoming more and more peaceful, daily living is becoming simpler day by day, event by event, then we are reverting back to our essence, sukha shanti. And we find we are now witnessing the flow of life more and more, seeing people do things the way they do them because that's the way they are designed. Seeing that we never know what the next moment brings, many times pain, sometimes pleasure. Seeing this is the nature of life, the nature of manifestation, which earlier I took very personally. And because I took it personally, I lost my peace and made others lose their peace. When I realize that behind, or rather above, each and every person is a personality shaped by God, including myself, then my relationship is no longer with persons but with God. And when my relationship is with God, then I'm abiding in being. I start witnessing the flow of life more and more. Fewer things surprise me now. I don't go into a tailspin or a turmoil like I used to, because I have realized the tongue has no taste by itself. When I realize that my thinking mind is dead now, not my working mind, my thinking mind, then I have started experiencing for myself what death is. To simplify, if I had an opinion about someone in particular in my life, and now the understanding is this person was playing out their blueprint precisely the way a higher force designed it, then I am now dead to my opinion about the person, something which I cherished and valued and treasured, my opinion. Now that opinion is standing in quicksand. That precious opinion, how precious is it now? So it means the ego has died to its opinion. This is a death. Such a person who is fortunate enough that the ego dies incrementally, bit by bit, resulting in more and more peace, more and more peace, more and more peace, is very fortunate, because they have gone through the process of death, which is what life is about. So the natural result is of more and more quietness and silence, less and less of trying to change people, dominate people, thinking I know better than God, and resting in witness consciousness, Sakshi Bhav, which is what Ramana Maharshi meant when he said, let what comes come, let what goes go, see what remains. What remains is pure being. Now, if one has realized the self, if one has realized the self, all this will automatically happen, because the realization is there is one self. The selfhood of that person and this person is but one. This way, in this approach, with daily living, by and by, by and by, by, it is unfolding in our lives. Many of us are living in the city. We are not sitting in a cave for 3 years in sadhana, tapasya, or going to an ashram. So our engagement with the world, our relationship with the world, our relationship with ourselves, is where we realize the self. That is then a state where Joel Goldsmith says that your presence is a blessing and benediction wherever you go, because you are going in peace and harmony, not in agitation and conflict, ready to pick the next fight. Because if you're carrying a sword, then the universe will put someone in front of you so you can use it. See how kind the universe is. It's looking after you. You want a fight, you'll get a fight. You want peace, you'll get peace. As within, so without. That is the law. And conditioning can be cruel. I met a woman in her late 50s who had a very bad marriage. And separation took place long back, I think 20 years ago. But she was telling me the other day how disproportionate her reactions are to the male species. Even something which is a slight pinprick, she gets triggered. She views it as aggression, whereas the person may not have meant it that way. But because conditioning is so strong, this comes up. That is the burden of conditioning. We can't see clearly. And so what happens when a wisdom teaching comes in, any teaching, and one resonates with it? Nobody is the doer of their actions. This is the burden of conditioning memory. What happens is these reactions are seen in the light of clarity. This is not about not having reactions, doing this, not doing that. It is about understanding the light of clarity that this is arising. It is disproportionate. And in this light of witnessing, that movement starts dissolving. Because you didn't create the conditioning, God did. And you think you can undo the conditioning. It's absurd. So when everything is seen in this light of clarity, others' reactions, my reactions, that is when all this is losing its grip on me. I'm getting freed of it. Helplessness brings humility, and helplessness is not really helplessness. It is the courage to see things as they are. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything? Just take the. I believe people are complaining in the recordings that the audience questions are not clear.
How to quieten the agitated mind at that moment?
You mean as a possible technique or tool?
Yes, to practice that tool when the mind is agitating, how to quieten that agitated mind? Do we give that mind some thought or let that moment go?
You see, as I just said, witnessing the agitated mind is all that is required. It's like I'm allowing the mind to do its thing. If that is difficult,
So just watch your agitated mind.
yes. And if you can, ask yourself, why is it agitated? And you will realize most likely it's because someone did something. Most likely. So if you are able to ask yourself, why is my mind agitated? And trace that, you will know the source of the agitation. And then you question that source.
It's a dialogue with your own self.
Yes. Now, some people are not able to do that. Now, my teacher was very clear. He said, at the end of each day, for 15 minutes, have your cup of coffee or tea, think of what disturbed you in the day, and ask yourself, did I see something, hear something, touch something, taste something, or smell something? And what did I see, hear, taste, smell, touch, which disturbed me? And then what was that disturbance based on? So he would take you back and you would conclude it is the sense of doership. Like he would say, anything you take, like if you say, I did something very good today, what? I helped a lady cross the street. Then ask yourself, that if you hadn't seen that lady, would you have helped the lady cross the street? So it was something seen which resulted in your action, which is making you feel good. So pleasure, yes, I felt great making someone cross the street, but no pride and arrogance, I did it. So like this, anything which is troubling us, we can investigate the cause of the trouble. Now, some people are not geared for this. Their minds don't work like this. So there are other teachings which say, okay, something agitates you, start doing a japa, start watching your breath, because it's taking one away from the compulsive thinking. So that you can see what suits your temperament. But my sense is the fact that you have been coming here means you are tasting that peace which one is speaking about. So the agitated mind will lose its grip by and by. You see, the agitated mind is nothing but me reinforcing my identity. Because I am not happy with what's going on in the world, so I'm agitated. I'm troubled. Or with myself, I'm part of the world. The question is, who knows that the mind is agitated? The agitated mind cannot know it is agitated because it is agitated. So who knows it is agitated? Something which is not agitated will know something is agitated. So what is that? You see, the peace is resting there. Yes, the peace is resting there.
In the source?
You could say that. You could say that. So even the agitated mind has to be offered at the feet of the source. Not I want to do something about the agitated mind. Even that has to be offered. That is called surrender. I can't control the agitation, so I'm offering it to you. If you think you can control the agitation, it is the ego walking in through the back door. I can do something. Let it be. The best way is to let it be. As Ramana Maharshi said, a guest comes to your house and you ignore the guest is not going to stay, it will leave. But if you keep giving food and saying, no, no, stay, stay, which is what we do, we keep feeding the agitation. If we ignore it, it's going to go because it's not getting sustained. The spotlight is not on it anymore. We put the spotlight.
The chatter of the mind.
It's crazy. You know, I took a photo which is on the phone, which I can't show you all. I had mentioned quite often in Bringers of the Dawn, the line which says, human beings love their drama so much that they get lost in the process of processing. I love analyzing myself, my this, my that, all the time. So on Marine Drive, in front of me, there was a man on a scooter waiting at the signal. And on the back of his shirt, in big bold letters, it is written, it is all part of the process. It is all part of the process. Let it be. Don't get stuck processing it. The mind loves processing. I remember when I read Stillness Speaks by Eckhart Tolle, which is just one, two line statements. One which I really liked, leave life alone, full stop. Let it be, full stop. Leave life alone, let it be.
Hi Gautam. So talking about over-analyzing and over-processing, I was listening to Avadhoot Gita yesterday, and it is mentioned that one needs to control the senses or transcend the senses. And with Rameshji's teaching, he says that you are not the doer of any of your actions. So my question is, then after listening to Avadhoot Gita, I started watching all my actions. Am I overeating? Am I doing something? So first is, am I cross-pollinating the two teachings?
No, not really, because they are all the same, but the interpretations are different. Controlling the senses is what is your interpretation of that, you see? The best way to control the senses, to me, is firstly to be aware of what is going on. Am I even aware? For example, most people aren't even aware that they are overeating. Now see, there are different paths, like the path of yoga sadhana, tapasya, kriya, those are practices. So let's say in that path you are told that you have to control this, you have to do this sadhana, that sadhana. Some personalities are geared for that. So they will follow that path. Different strokes for different folks. But as Ramana Maharshi said, that it is ultimately the end of all practices. Now this does not mean one does not practice. Because if that is part of the journey, one has to go through that. But ultimately it is seen that abiding in one's being and resting as the self does not require anything to be done. But till that point, if I am so inclined, I follow a path which appeals to me.
I thought it was too much doership, watching every action. What am I watching? Is it, is it activating too much of my sense and thinking mind?
For you, it could be activating. For someone else, it may not. Like we discussed just now about an agitated mind and trying to inquire why is it agitated. Could be that. Point is, whatever path I am following, I have only one measure. Am I more at peace now than I was before? That is the only criteria. I don't know any other criteria. So if my answer is a clear yes, then Why create unnecessary trouble? Why trouble ourselves more than what trouble is coming our way? Enough is coming. Why add to that burden? Isn't it? Yes, Hamza.
Just what Meenakshi said. Actually, what happens is that at what you said, Gautam, we have a personality type. Like some people are extrovert, the Bahirmukhi or the Antarmukhi, which is the introvert. So this path of bhakti or yoga, you know, which is actually the end goal is to drop the mind, to drop the ego. But some people can't sit still. They are not able to sit in that silence because they are the personality type precludes that. So they need to do the Ashtanga Yoga, the 8 steps of yoga, or be externally. And eventually the final goal is to drop the mind. Like Shankaracharya ji said that Brahman Satyam Jagat Mityam. The idea is that if you look at this as a leela, because everything here is a play of consciousness. And everyone is, like this, as you rightly said, acting his path out. So it's the simple thing is that the end goal is to get peace through the mind. The mind is the obstacle because it's trying to establish its identity. The mind is fallacious. It's only a yantra, a sort of device to interpret what the soul is telling the body. So the soul can't communicate with the body. So the mind comes in as that, as a tool. But the mind wants to establish its identity. The senses are there to aid us, to find, go back to our original self. But they become the master. And then they start creating this drama so that we get embroiled in the drama and not allow ourselves to get freedom. So that's why Raman Maharishi, it was called a Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta is free from life and free in life. So he was free from adulation. He was free from people's opinions. He was just flowing. And he didn't get attached to people coming and worshipping him or people, you know, even treat, you know, condemning him. So it was all about being free in that space. So it's all about the personality type. That was what Meenakshi was saying. So some people like the analysis, the mind games, or go and dropping the mind eventually with that. And some people just like to...
Like I have seen engineers and lawyers who are drawn to this teaching. They are using their mind because their minds are built that way. So they want to understand, ask, question, or even chartered accountants, for example, because that's the way they are made. But it's this personality, you see, how each personality is designed.
Psychology, they call, sorry.
No, I thought I remembered a joke that a boy tells a girl, I love your personality. She said, don't worry, I have 3 of them. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. No. So actually, in psychology, they analyze a person in the first sitting, whether what suggestibility he belongs to. So if it's a emotional suggestible, he's an introvert. And if it's a physical suggestible, he's an extrovert. And that's where even in psychology, the therapy starts by analyzing the personality type. So we have the distinct personality types, you know, which is... And that what resonates with that?
You see, I use my own example. I was a quiet child, even preschool and during school. But because I was questioned, why are you quiet? What's troubling you? What's going on in your mind? I thought I had a personality defect. So I was then overanalyzing myself. Is something wrong with me? A lot of thoughts troubling me, you know. So the mind started getting twisted when earlier that issue was not there only. Because the mind is just then on a churn, you know, because someone has said something, so it must mean this, it must mean that. That's how we get lost in this whole story. It's amazing. So someone is quiet, someone talks a lot. Like you meet someone who's talking non-stop, talking a lot. Now you know they are designed that way. Inside you may say, Baap re, ye kab band karega? But you see, the whole weight is lifted off the individual. You are no longer pointing a finger at someone. It's so beautiful when you start seeing that people are really helpless.
When that other person is talking so much, if this thought comes to your mind, itna bakwaas kar raha hai, whatever.
Yes.
When that person would stop talking.
Yes.
Is that okay, or you just keep listening to that person without your mind saying all these thoughts? And that person eventually will stop.
Yes, because you have seen that this person is just playing out their script and the way they are designed, you don't get agitated as such, like perhaps you would have. But the thought may come, now when is this going to stop, right? But you will be respectful, you will be mindful. More importantly, you will decide for yourself, next time, do I want to meet this person or not? Without any judgment.
And if I'm able to accept it,
yes,
without my mind agitating and bringing this thought,
yes,
then it is okay.
It is
okay. To meet that person again, right? Because it is not disturbing my mind.
Yes, if you feel that I see things in this person which I really enjoy, except for this quality, your patience levels may increase. Could be. Because now your focus is on something else. So you will tell yourself, let this person keep saying what they have to, I'll hear them out. Or at some point you may feel, no, now enough. But because all your decisions now are objective, because you are not blaming and hating someone for being a certain way. So you will respond to this person. And if that means at one point saying, now I think it's enough, you won't meet that person again. But you'll still wish that person well.
Because I'm going through this now.
And then
it's a good example for me to understand.
Even better is if you ask yourself, maybe I'm also saying a lot of bakwas but not aware of it. That can also happen.
But yes, you see your own growth in this.
Yes.
With your own reaction.
Yes. Yes.
And eventually where you are.
Because it's all about your own growth. It's got nothing to do with the other. The other stirring up what's within us. Amazing. Then life becomes a sadhana. It becomes a meditation. It's so beautiful. The whole spotlight has now gone within. The appearance is there. The appearance that something is done by the other. Now it is seen as an appearance. And what is it throwing up within me? That is what is more important. It's so beautiful. What is the content of my consciousness? Because the agitation is in me only.
Sometimes I feel you also.
Why are you hiding behind the chair? Yeah?
Because it's very cold.
Here. It is very cold. I don't know why the fan and the AC is on. You can switch one off.
You can.
Just Dwarpal.
Since I've started trying to put this to a little bit of practice, I've seen that when people are like, the first thing you see is people can talk a lot. Once you go a little silent, and I felt like when you start applying this, nobody's the doer of their actions in your heart, while someone's, you know, incessantly talking, I start seeing what they really want to say, but they're unable to say it.
Sure.
So they're incessantly talking, but sometimes what, you know, he or she is really trying to say that I lost my mom and I miss her. But the dialogue is cribbing about something completely different. And then if you can really hear what they're saying, but they're not able to say, sometimes you're able to calm them down a little bit, or, you know, help them talk about it and help them in some way. Like,
sure, I agree with you. Yeah. It is when people ask questions in satsang, it is not that the questions are being answered. The questioner is being answered. It is seen where the question is coming from. Just like you said, where the talk is coming from.
That's why I don't ask anything.
And the thing is that you are right, that it appears people are talking more and more as one is becoming more and more quiet, because one is becoming more and more sensitive. So even the slight disturbance is amplified. That is true. That also happens.
And at times, people don't even have to say a single word for you to feel how disturbed they are sitting in a room.
Sure. It can happen. If you're even more sensitive, you may find that if you're meeting someone for dinner and you go back to your home, you are not able to sleep, because a disturbed mind is a vibration which one can absorb, so to speak, and a peaceful mind is a vibration which one can absorb. Ultimately, when one is resting in the self, nothing can disturb that. But on the journey, it is a journey of being more and more refined, more and more sensitive. So Goldsmith was quite right when he said that for someone who's deeply on the spiritual path, even a slight transgression of the law is what he calls it, not the legal laws, the spiritual laws, gets magnified.
What does that mean, transgression of the laws?
Means the smallest thing, like, okay, for example, you see someone telling someone else something based on doership and it's something ill-intended. Because you are more sensitive, it hurts you more because you're seeing it happen there, so to speak. So similarly with yourself, if something minor happens, which 10 years ago would be insignificant, and you say, my God, and that minor transgression looks so big that even this happened. So things really get amplified. See, for example, you don't eat anything. That means your tongue is at rest for one full day, and then you just put a drop of food. It gets amplified. If you're constantly feeding yourself, that thing goes. So like that, when one is at rest, when one is at peace, a slight ripple becomes like a tidal wave. This is on the journey. Ultimately, no. I'm just saying that, like, as you said, that for you, this is happening, that when someone talks a lot, you can see this, see that. That is part of the process. And you cannot tell someone who talks a lot to talk less.
Because they are not the doer of their actions.
Yes. And you don't know best. Maybe the way they are processing their drama is through talking. Unless they ask you, am I talking a lot? And then you say, in all honesty, I feel so. And if you'd like to discuss it, we can.
In all probability, they'll start talking before you can finish your answer. No, most of it is, in a way, some sort of trauma response. You know, the personality types I feel we develop are not coincidental.
Everything is based on our vasanas and sanskaras. Nothing is coincidental. The whole point is, are we unconsciously living out our patterns, or is there sufficient grace with us that something or someone has come along our way which is now putting a spotlight on our patterns and unconscious living? For example, you are unconsciously living out a relationship in which there is an action-reaction all the time. The action-reaction loop is non-stop, like a tennis match. You'll play the tennis match till the end of your life. Or has the opportunity been presented to see what's going on? Because you are tired of this tennis match, this non-stop action-reaction loop with a particular person. And a teaching or teacher comes in and says, hey, hold on. Now look at this unconscious patterning, unconscious reactions in this light. Then it's a huge opportunity to break the action-reaction loop. Now, how do I break this loop? If I'm playing a tennis match and expecting the other to change, wouldn't it be simpler if I kept my racket down? If I'm not perpetuating the game, it is the end of the game. I am perpetuating the game because of believing others are the doers of their actions. So then the action-reaction loop does not get sustenance anymore. Which basically means, in this particular relationship where there was action-reaction, now with the light of awareness, I find I am not reacting but rather responding. Respond I must. I have to decide. Am I to continue in this relationship? Step out? What are my options? After all, I'm a human being. But because I'm no longer unconsciously hitting the ball back, I'm now in a space where I can decide for myself what is the best course of action for me. And because this decision will not be based on angst, ill will, and so on, which Goldsmith calls malpractice, because it will be based on clear seeing, it will be a response. That is what starts happening. which basically means I am no longer reincarnating into those action-reaction loops like I used to earlier. Every time I get stuck, I'm reincarnating into this me as opposed to that me. My view opposed to your view. You said this, I said this. Constant reincarnation. Forget the next birth. In this life itself, when I perpetuate the me, I'm reincarnating, reincarnating, reincarnating. Living out my story again and again and again. Reinforcing, this is me, this is my view, this is this, you are that. When that is dropped, I find I'm now only responding to people and to life, not reacting to them.
This is where the conflict comes, responding and reacting.
Yes, the ego with its sense of doership is mired in reactivity. Reactivity, activated and reactivated and reactivated and reactivated. It's like I poke you, poke, all your life that happens. And there are enough people in your life to poke you. You want more? I'll send them your way. It is very true when they say, take one person in your life and resolve one issue with them. Just one. Maybe there are 3-4 issues, right, with someone. Because when you resolve that one issue with one person, you have resolved that issue for all as far as you are concerned. Now, supposing I say this particular person in my life has the money but never takes me out for a meal. Miser, right? Now I say all my life I've been condemning this person within myself that he's a miser, she's a miser. Now I've seen, so what? God gave the money, but they have some deep insecurity which does not allow them to spend freely. So I've released them from my judgment that they are a miser. Now I've accepted maybe they were short of money in their childhood, so they are very careful about spending. Maybe. I don't know. Right? What does this mean? It is resolved. My issue with this person on this aspect is resolved for myself. I can see the person is not being a miser deliberately, which means I will not judge anyone else because the resolution has happened that the miser did not choose to be a miser. So I will not call anyone else miserly. So it takes one person and one resolution for changing the dynamic with everyone because the realization is within me only.
So each miser is playing their script.
Yes. Just as someone who is generous is playing out their script.
But mind tries to label it.
Yes. And judge. That is what the mind does. We start leaving people alone to be themselves. That is what starts happening. Rather than being obsessed with trying to change them, wishing they would be another way. There was someone I met at the club who's not too familiar with what I speak about, but she is on her own path. She has, she's a Westerner, so been to Western teachers and all that. So she said, I've read a bit, seen little of your videos. Can I conclude that what you are saying in one sentence is, not my circus, not my monkeys? I said, yes. And she said, that's what's happening. Anything anyone asks me, any opinion, this, that, or something goes on, I tell myself, not my circus, not my monkeys. Amazing, because it's true.
So my question is, if...
One sec.
Question.
And we are actually, we put up the tent, put everyone on the stage, put the animals there, doing the acrobatics. It's all ours. Circus is ours, monkeys ours, everything, clowns ours.
It can't take the discomfort. So if you're just walking away from every relationship most of the time.
That is a problem. Because it's many people are seeing this. Many people have most of their relationships distressing and disturbing them. So the invitation is to resolve this, not walk away from it all. Because if there are more people in your life you don't get along with than there are, it needs to be seen. And the ego needs the courage and the opening to look what is wrong here. Because obviously, if most of my relationships are not working out, it means I am not at peace with the relationships, I'm in conflict with them, and so are others with me. Maybe I'm putting people off. It could be. It's not just me walking away. So that is a troubled mind. And that mind, if by the grace of the source, is drawn to a wisdom teaching or teacher, that is a huge opportunity, huge, because it is now presented, the window has been opened, and it is a question of time. But if one lives this out unconsciously, where most of our relationships are not working out, and this goes on till the end of life, then there is no peace in that life. Because all relationships are a reflection of my relationship with myself. All relationships, be it family, friends, colleagues, or the stranger on the road, are a reflection of my relationship with myself. Why? Because the manifestation, life, people, is a reflection of the source within itself. It is not apart from the source. Is the reflection in the mirror apart from you? So if most of my relationships are disturbed, it means my relationship with myself is disturbed. So if I am avoiding relationships because most are disturbed, I am avoiding seeing myself. Fortunate is the one who has more disturbed relationships than peaceful, but has found his or her way to some spiritual guidance. Now, in traditional thought, Hindu thought specifically, there is a belief that even this opportunity can be missed. This opportunity, if one comes across it, if it is not recognized as an opportunity, it can be missed. Ultimately, we may say even that is God's will. But this is the traditional thought which I have come across. I have been to many masters, teachers over my lifespan, that the source will present the opportunity, but it can get missed. Therefore, I keep saying, someone who is more troubled, the fact that they are drawn to something, they are blessed, because the turning will happen. When, we don't know. But that inward journey has begun. So it's a very good thing you have raised. Very important point. Very important.
There is one case kind of a reverse to this, or the other case. It is happening in my case, like everything is working out other than the closest one or two, my wife and children. For example, one question my daughter asked me is, you are giving too much importance to other persons. Then I said, I treat everyone equal. No, Baba, you are treating others kind of God. Then I am saying, I am following oneness and you are also God to me. Everyone is God. Or I treat. No, we don't feel that way. So that troubles me a lot.
Sure. So what do you do in such a situation? You do precisely what you feel you should do. You have got this input from family. You ask yourself, am I withholding some form of love or whatever, respect, reverence, whatever it may be? You have to ask yourself that. And you have to say, if I feel, then I apologize and I say I'll try my best. But if I feel, no, I am really giving my all, 100% to family. I know it in the bottom of my heart. Then what does it mean? It is not recognized by the other. And you have no control of what the other is feeling. So as long as your conscience is clear, in the sense, you take on board what is said by family, you ask yourself, investigate, is there something behind that? Maybe I could be more giving, or maybe I can't give anymore, I'm just giving 100%. So once that is recognized by you, and you feel that, no, I am really who I am, and I do see everyone as the same source consciousness and God, then you have to accept that some relationships are meant to give pain. God has not guaranteed all your relationships will be harmonious. The rivers of karma run deep. The rivers of karma run deep. And rinanubandhan. Some relationships, you may try your best, but if they are not meant to work out, they won't work out. But because you have absorbed the other and yourself from doership, the pivot of the Bhagavad Gita, you are at peace. Doesn't mean there's no pain. Now, my Sufi guide in Kashmir, one day on Eid, when he was sitting with his children and grandchildren, the thought came to him, why am I wasting my time here? They have each other. That day, he said, this is my last Eid with y'all. I am going to the orphanage and spending time with them. He didn't ask them, how do you feel? Are you okay? To hell, he said, to hell with them. I've taken good care of them. They have each other. Bye-bye. Because he is built that way. I have given my all. My time is up as far as celebrations with y'all are concerned. And he's very happy. He goes on his own, takes some of his friends, distributes food on Eid, takes them out on a picnic in a bus. So it was, his approach was not to even wonder, are you okay? And all. He said, bus, it's done. So everyone is made differently.
Many times, someone giving others is also paining someone. Like you told me to process, like I have done that kind of thing, what I can do. What I experienced is, if you serve somebody else, that pains also somebody else, like closest relationship. I'm saying, like I donate 100 rupees to someone, even though I earn 1 lakh, sure. It pains.
It pains the other person who has seen you donate the 100.
Yeah. Even if it is negligible, 100 rupees I feel.
Understand. Therefore?
Somehow, I'm not crossed that. It pains me.
Because the other is pained to see you give money to someone. Yes. But it's natural. If someone you love is pained by your action, you would also feel it. But so what?
Then when I stop giving, that also pains me. It's a kind of...
Now this question is about, should I stop giving? What is my innate nature? Is my innate nature to give? Yes, this other person is pained. Because the other person is pained, I am pained. But now, am I trying to buy my relationships to make everyone happy? And so what was my innate nature to give someone money? I start withholding because I feel my relationship with someone I love depends on this act. And therefore, if I don't give, I'm ensuring this relationship is stable. This is where the trouble begins. If my nature is to give, I have to accept someone may be pained by that action, and that may have consequences, which will also be God's will. But if I am honoring my innate nature, life will become too complex if I have to walk on broken glass all the time, not being the way I want to be, how God has made me, just so that I don't offend others. Because then they will love me less. Then that is the start of a very painful journey. You're always questioning yourself, second guessing, will this person be upset if I do that? And you've lost your center.
I have observed in myself, when I do something spontaneously without allowing my mind to jump into it, and then I facilitate. So then I realize ki whatever your spontaneous actions in me are more giving me happiness and peace than the mind bringing the different thoughts and confusing me more.
Sure.
And mostly spontaneous actions come from the heart. Mostly.
And then I agitate, you know, I wish and I should, then, you know, that spontaneous would have then happened and gone, but here I'm still brooding. Exactly. That's the mind.
Gautam, I wanted to ask him for what the gentleman spoke about. Now, he is being true to himself, to his swadharma of giving charity and, you know, and is agitating people around him. Now, how does he deal with those people who keep on nagging him and keep disturbing his peace, because they will not, they'll be relentless. Because if they don't, if a family member doesn't like you doing something, they're not going to let up. So the conflict is between his true nature, being true to himself, and also maintaining the peace in the external environment. So what is it? How does he deal with this?
He has to do precisely that which he thinks and feels he should do. So for example, if he feels, look, I have had enough of this nagging, I'm going to express myself to them once. Whether they listen to it or not is God's will. But I will not get troubled by it. If he is centered in peace with the full understanding, it will go in ear, in one ear, out the other. But if because they are in the same environment, the nagging goes on and they refuse to stop, he will again have to take a decision based on what he thinks and feels he should do, what his options are. Now, for example, I'm not saying this is a way. I'm just telling you how someone else I know who's in their 80s has resolved this issue. He is in a house where he is not able to get along with his wife and daughter. Not able to. How does he resolve it? He's out of the house most of the time.
80s
years? Yes. In 80, he's 82. No, he's 82 years old. So you see, I'm not saying a way to resolve it for him is to go out of the house. See, Advaita, this teaching will not tell you what to do and what not to do. It is not playing God. This teaching will tell you whatever you do. Take a decision based on your situation, your buddhi, as long as the understanding is no one is the doer of the actions. Because the whole quality of your decision changes. So in this instance of this man who's 82, he has figured out for himself what works best for him. And you know, people normally nag and say the same thing again and again because they want themselves to hear it. It is true. You should know if you're in psychology, would you agree with me? People are just telling themselves the same thing again and again.
But Gautam, like you said, peace is very boring. And people don't want peace. They want agitation and drama all the time. Now, as Lady said, that you know, we walk away from relationships for peace. Sometimes a relationship is very, very toxic. And so isn't that your own way of your coping mechanism?
Could be. But everyone wants peace, whether they know it or not. Those who are agitated are scared of peace. Because who am I when I'm peaceful? Who am I when I'm at peace? I'm nobody. Peace is nobody. And I am afraid to die. It appears that they don't want peace, but they are the ones suffering the most.
That's right.
The last talk of the year will be on 29th December, Sunday 20th. I remember, what is it called? Meme?
Yeah.
Which said, never in the history of calming down has a person calmed down after being told to calm down. Doesn't work that way.
Very offensive to say calm down.
It is. Because the reaction you get is, I'm calm. Yeah.